Good morrow, and welcome back to The Realm. I am epic fantasy author J.V. Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe, and for those of you marking your first adventure into my realm, this is a vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis, and each of those creatives specialize in a different art form. And as always, if you like what you hear, you could find me and my epic and dark fantasy novels at jvhilliard.com, or feel free to follow me at J.V. Hilliard Books on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or you can look for me at J.V. Hilliard on Facebook or on Discord. So I'd like to thank our sponsor this evening, Altered Reality Magazine. You can find them at www.alteredrealitymag.com for the best in speculative fiction and poetry. And as we reach our witching hour tonight, let me cast my message spell and take control of the magical airwaves of Blog Talk Radio. And for you Dungeons & Dragons nerds out there, and I know there are many listening, the duration of my magic here is about 30 minutes. So set your sundials and let's enter the realm together. Today, we are chronicling the adventures of Cori Walmsley. She is the CEO of Aurora Coriolis Publishing, which is a kick-butt name. What a great name. And a speculative fiction author herself. And so, Cori, well met and welcome to the realm.
Thank you for having me on.
It is my pleasure. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself and what you do and where they can find you.
Yeah. So as the publisher at Aurora Coriolis, I work with a lot of coaches and speakers, people who have a nonfiction story that they want to share. These people usually have been through some sort of a challenge that they want to share about so they can help others with the same challenge. I help them write a book. I help them get it out to the world. And then there's always the writing side of me. I'm a fiction author. I write mostly women's fiction, although over the years I have also written middle grade fantasy and children's books, and I also have one book that is a business book on how to write a book.
Well, you know, it's funny that you and I both have a book about mermaids, and we'll get into that in a little bit, by the way. You mentioned something I want to start off with, and you mentioned it last, so I'm going to put it first. And I know you have a best-selling book out there, The Spark Method. And mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier when you were introducing yourself that you're out there helping people that are not necessarily authors write books about themselves and their personal journeys. I know some folks do that as CEOs and they kind of transition and they've got to tell the story about what they've done, or people, like you said, they're overcoming some sort of problem in their life and they have a good story to tell that others can learn from. Where did the idea for the Spark Method come from? A lot of our listeners are both readers and authors, and I think that they're going to be interested because I don't have a lot of nonfiction folks in here, a lot of the stuff translates pretty well. So where did the yeah. inspiration come from for Spark?
As a business owner, it's important for me to have a book that speaks to what my expertise is. And it's kind of hypocritical if I'm out there telling everyone else to have a book for their business and then I don't have one myself. So that was kind of the driver behind it. But the method that I teach in the Spark Method is something that I learned as a fiction writer. It was basically how to write a book in a simple, quick way. And I blended that with the different things that a nonfiction author often has in their pocket. A lot of people who are speakers or coaches, people who are transitioning from, from a corporate job into some sort of a leadership role where they're going to be out talking to a lot of people about what they've been through. A lot of those people have articles and speeches and videos and all these other things, a blog. So I actually used pieces from my blog on how to write a book, pulled those together and kind of created a lot of the chapters from that. I embellished, I filled in the blanks in between, and that's how I wrote that book. So I was teaching what I was doing to write the book in the book. So it's kind of a funny exercise, but it's something that I wanted to get out there to make it really simple for people, because if you think about a nonfiction book and you think about how hard it is to tell your personal story, there are just so many things that work against you. And a lot of people will just say, I'm not going to do this. I don't know how to write. I don't feel comfortable with my story. I don't know what to do with the book after I'm done with it. So this is really speaking to people who are doing more self-publishing or working with maybe a small press that needs them to do a lot of the heavy lifting for them.
So, you know, I'm going to ask you to give some free advice away then. So as a, as someone who does this for a living and helps other authors, what are a few pieces of, must-do kind of advice that you can give to aspiring authors, whether they're fiction or nonfiction? I mean, do you have sort of like must-do rules that you impress upon all of your clients?
I think to start out, the best thing that you can do, and I love saying this to people because it always makes them laugh, write drunk, edit sober. The best thing you can do is to just relax and get the story out and not judge yourself or try to worry too much about a ton of rules because, you know, we've all been through English classes where they say, oh, a paper has to look like this and a paragraph has to look like this. And, you know, that's fine when you're starting out. But once you get into a place where you want to share a story, the focus is going to be more on the story and not how many sentences are in a paragraph. You want to be able to relax and get the story out. So I liken that to when somebody's had a couple glasses of wine or they've had a couple of beers. They are way easier to just sit down and get a story out of them. So always write very lucid, very comfortable, very just open, without judgment. I think that's the best way to get your story out. And then later, when you have everything out, once you've gotten through that flow of, you know, getting all the words out, you can go back and examine from a kind place, not a judgmental place. Go back and look at your work and say, you know, is this actually what I wanted to share? Is this what the audience needed to hear? I think it's important to get everything out first before we start worrying about, is this right and is this okay, and all of those kind of things. And always coming at it from a perspective that there are people out there who want to hear what you have to say, not worrying about all those people who are going to be judging you or whatever. Whatever, they're not your audience. Who cares what they think?
You know, that's a really good piece of advice. I mean, I hear two sides of what you've said. I mean, the first, the right drunk, edit sober. What a great line, by the way. That is that is such a great tagline.
Like,
you know, when I'm asked at conferences or you know, book signings, you know, what are some advice I would give? I always tell people to be open to constructive criticism. Right? It has to be constructive. It can't just be,
right,
you know, I didn't like it. Well, why didn't you like it? I don't know. Well, you know, like that doesn't work.
Yeah.
But you know what you just described on the front end is you're being constructively critical of yourself. I mean, you had that moment where you were just sharing everything, and you're right. Sometimes things hit the editing floor, and you kill your darlings, and you take out some stuff for the sake of targeting an audience or the sake of, you know, making a book a better book. And so not everything you put in your manuscript survives, you know, but I do like the back end of that too. I mean, I think those are really two nice nuggets of wisdom for those that are listening tonight and those download this tomorrow. I mean, I think those are really, really good pieces of advice. Have you yourself, because you're an author and I didn't ask you this ever, and I should have. Have you ever used a service like your own? You know, and if you did, why did you do it? And if you didn't, why would you recommend a service like yours?
So I didn't even know that this kind of stuff existed when I first started working on my books. I was working with a lot of people who were editors, so I had access, very easy access, to anyone who wanted to read my stuff and give me their thoughts, change some things. You know, if they wanted to tighten it up, do proofreading, all of that kind of stuff. So I had that benefit in my pocket. Plus, I was actually a professional writer and editor. I worked for the government for 10 years. So I had all of that kind of stuff going on. When I started my business, it was actually out of necessity. I lost my job with the government. They laid off all their senior staff, and I didn't know what to do. And one of my friends was very encouraging. She said, you know, job hunt, but I really think you need to start your own thing. I started out doing a lot of freelancing, and then that's when people started asking me, well, you know, you've written books, so how do you write a book? What do you do? I need an editor. And so I just
kind of came to see where this is going. Yeah.
I became their go-to person, and once they started asking questions, anything that I didn't know, I found out. So I dug around, I asked people, I made the right connections. So I built everything that I'm doing, but I had learned so much during the writing process and by helping others with their books, that by the time I started my publishing house in 21, I had everything pretty much nailed down. It was a science by that point. And I've never worked with someone outside of the publishing house except once, outside of the publishing house or aside from my colleagues who I used to work with. I did hire a woman to do a deep edit of my first book, because that was my, like, hamster book. That was the one that I was trying to figure out everything on. That's how I figured out how to write a book. And when she went in, I mean, she tore it up. And that really gave me a lot of perspective on, you know, what an editor's job was. And it's not to tell you that you're wrong. It's to tell you, hey, these are some things I would change to make this an amazing manuscript. I don't remember where I was going with this, but I learned so much along the way from all those pieces coming together. And now, like, I work with our editors. Whenever I have a book to write, Allison is my editor, and she always goes in and she tears it up for me and helps me put it back together.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mention that, because I think that when I get asked the question, what's the worst part about being an author, it's always the editing process. And I don't think it's because, I'm excited to get through it because I know that the product will be better on the back end, but mm-hmm. I also know it's going to be upsetting. And I don't mean that in a way where I'm upset because I missed a comma somewhere. I mean, those are just, that's a cost of doing business when you're going through the editing process. I mean it more on the lines of people telling you that your book can be better in several places, and you have to put your ego aside and listen to the critique, you know, and in mm-hmm. a lot of cases it makes sense. I tell people this all the time. You do not have to accept the editor's advice. They're there to give it because they're trying to make your book better. They're not trying to hammer you for something that you're not good at. They're trying to put you in a situation where you're going to listen. And that's why, especially in the fiction side, I've got a copy line editor. I have a development editor. I have a final editor. I have my publisher. And then I've got 6 beta readers. You know, it's a team sport. You know, and at the end, it comes out better. And it doesn't matter how close, you know, buttoned up I think my manuscript is, it never is. And when you see it and you get like 1,100 corrections back, you're like, oh. You know, but by the time it's done, you're glad you did it because the book is better. It's just better, yeah. Right? So yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because I think that's a lot of people that I know, you listeners out there, I know that some of you get kind of fidgety about that because it's your art. But at the end of the day, you're going to have a much better product when you make it a team sport and you get those things together. Staying a little bit on that theme, I've got another question for you, because I think people will be interested from hearing it from your side of the table as a publisher and a consultant. What mm-hmm. is the best money that an indie author can spend, in your opinion? You know, is it on software? Is it on the editing process? Is it on something we haven't mentioned tonight? Like, if I'm sitting there and I'm going and doing a self-publishing deal, whether it's nonfiction or fiction, what's the best money that you could tell them that they can spend? Where they're going to see the most bang for their buck?
Absolutely, editing, number one. And I would say number two, and I'm not even talking about like marketing and all of that kind of stuff, but for book production, I would say your cover. You really need to work with somebody who knows what they're doing. I know a lot of people will just say, oh, you know, I can go on Fiverr and just pay somebody $50 to create a cover. And it might be nice, but when I work with our cover designer, she asks questions I don't even think about as a writer, because she's thinking about it from the perspective of, where is this going to sit on the virtual shelf, you know, if you're on Amazon? Who is this going to be sitting beside? What do their covers look like? And I don't like to call them competitors. I like to call them peers, because those are the books that you're going to be surrounded with. And you want to fit in with those peers, but you also want to stand out. So I think the cover is massively important. I could go on and on about the covers. I've seen some that they look like they belong in a completely different genre from what they actually are. People try to be cute and clever with a title, and it just doesn't work, because then it says, oh, this belongs over here, and you're attracting the wrong audience. You want to make sure that, like, the title and the cover fit for your audience. Like, you know, with fantasy, you want to make sure that people spot that cover. They don't even have to think about it. They know it's a fantasy book. With mine, if they look at it, they know it's women's fiction. it, with a children's book, you know, same sort of thing. You know, that's a kid's book. You don't want to mix up your genres too much or you're confusing your audience. You're not being creative. You're just confusing people.
Well, you are tapped at center on that. I learned that through one of my editing processes. They made sure, because I had an idea for a cover, and I'm glad I didn't listen to myself. You know, I listened to my illustrator, and she said the exact same stuff, which is, you know, would you see this in a fantasy sci-fi section, or is this going to belong in the horror section? And when you hear that, you're like, I get it. Or even the font for the your name on the cover, or the font for the title of the book has to say what it is you do, because I think that, you know, when you go into a store, I mean, think about it. The first thing you do is you look on the shelf and you grab a book that's cover pops at you, and it's one you're going to want to like, and it's going to be related to that genre. Then you grab it. The next thing you do is you turn it over and read the blurb on the back, you know, and at that point, the stuff on the cover doesn't even need to be in the book. It just has to attract you to pick it up. You know, and those are the first two steps. And you're right about the thumbnail on Amazon, too. Like, sometimes covers look great on a shelf. They might not look good in that little itty-bitty 1x1.5 square that Amazon gives you to advertise your book in, too. So it's got to be something that pops online, because a lot of books are sold on Amazon and a lot of online distributors. I think that's fantastic advice. So, well, look, let's pivot a little bit here. I want to talk about you as an author, if you don't mind. You know, I know you've written several fiction books, including a kid's book. And I teased you a little earlier because I have a mermaid story and you've got monkey mermaid magic. Now, our books are entirely different. Mine's a little kind of dark fantasy and yours is a little more kid's book. But do you prefer writing fiction for yourself, or even though you've had a lot of success, best-selling success on the nonfiction side, do you prefer your writing to be on the fiction, the speculative side, or doesn't it matter to you?
Love writing fiction. I have sat down before and thought about what I would do if I needed to write another nonfiction book, and I may in the future, especially if it's something that works with my business. And I always advise people to make sure that if you are doing nonfiction and you have a business, that it does coincide. Otherwise, you have two completely different businesses. But I love writing fiction. I would much rather sit down and, you know, come up with all kinds of storylines and create characters and send them off on adventures than do anything else. Actually, when I was writing Braving the Shore a couple of years ago, I would, like, that was my fun time that whole summer. I ended up writing that book in about 6 weeks, and that was the draft. That was not a completed manuscript.
Oh, my God, that is fast.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm
jealous.
Go ahead.
I said I'm jealous.
Oh. Well, I had a lot of downtime. I happened to not have as many clients that summer, and my kids were home, so I would, like, let them go watch a movie, and I'd sneak in the office and just sit here and write and write and write, and they'd come in and be like, is it bedtime? I'm like, oh, yeah, go to bed. I'm going to stay here. So, yeah, that's fun for me.
So do you have something in the fiction pipeline? I mean, what's next for you? You got any works in progress there that you want to talk about?
I have a bunch of things in my head. I've had requests for a continuation of both Braving the Shore and The Treasures We Seek. I've had people ask me about different characters. They want to hear their stories, or they want to see what happens in Treasures, like when Kenzie goes back to Italy. And I've had another story kind of brewing about a woman who's a scientist, and she lives in the Seattle area. And I actually need to interview someone. I have a couple friends who are scientists, so I was going to talk to them about some of the things that they experience. Because the books that I like to write are talking about some of the challenges that that women are experiencing in their lives. In Braving the Shore, my character came to kind of a crossroads, and she was trying to figure out if she wanted to continue down that path that she was on, or if she wanted to just scrap everything and start over, because she had the perfect opportunity fall in her lap so she could do that. So I was trying to dive into what that would be like for a character to suddenly have that come up in their life. In The Treasures We Seek, what I was doing there was talking about a woman who had been through a really rough relationship and breakup, and it caused her to kind of lose trust in herself and in everything around her, everyone around her. So I wanted to explore what it was like for somebody to be so heavily self-judgmental, and to, you know, have anxiety and to try to put herself back together and learn how to trust herself and people around her again. So this one, I haven't quite figured out what I'm going to be doing, but I want to tackle some of the issues. I used to work for a national lab, and I know that working in sort of a male-dominated field, like, you know, working in a lab, there are a lot of challenges there. So I wanted to kind of dive into some of the maybe insecurities and, you know, frustrations that a woman in that position would be dealing with.
So you know, that you make a couple of good points in there, you know, and the one thing I'll say that, you know, for me, I'm forced by my genre to write series. I mean, the expectation from my readership is that it's going to be a series. You're not forced in the same way to do that with women's fiction. I mean, you can write one-off stories all day long, but it sounds to me like you've had people have entreated you to, hey, I want an origin story of this, their favorite character, or hey, I want a follow-up story. I mean, are you giving that thought? Is that the plan? Is a series in your future, or is there like a, you know, a prelude, like we're going to origin story of one of your favorite characters, or, you know, do you see it, you know, kind of blossoming in those directions? Did you ever expect it to go in that direction?
I have never thought about it going in that direction, but after hearing what people want, I've kind of played with it, especially The Treasures We Seek. My character, Kenzie, who had been through the rough breakup, she has an opportunity to go back to Italy. You find out about it at the end of the book, and everyone's like, oh, okay, well, there's going to be a second one. I'm like, oh, I hadn't really planned on it. I thought that just set you up so that you could get to go back and everybody would be happy, but no. And then there was a character, her mentor at the architecture firm where she's working. Her mentor is someone who I just kind of channeled all the best of every mentor I had had, college professors, a couple of women I worked with at my previous job. I channeled it all into one person, and everybody was like, she's just amazing. I want her to be my mentor. And someone said they wanted to hear her story, and it's been kind of more appealing to find out, you know, what would make a person become such a phenomenal mentor. Just things that I've been toying with, is, you know, we always have this fascination with villains, you know, what made them be such a jerk, you know, what happened in their lives that made them be this way? And I think we can play the other way too, you know, what happened to make them such a phenomenal mentor, or what happened to make them such a, you know, just a warm, caring person, you know, what's their life been like? So yeah, there is a little bit of interest there.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I get some of that in my writing, in the sense that, but it's about the villains. Like, people love to know the background of the big bad evil guys all the time.
Yeah.
Like, because they want to know how they got twisted in the way they did, and because no one's ever born evil. It's just something's happened to you. You made a bad choice and it goes off the rails. And are you Darth Vader and come back to the good side, or are you not and continue to go off the rails? You know, and stuff. But you know, when you think about in contemporary fiction, especially the kind of stuff you're doing too, I would love to read a story about how someone became a good mentor and what they did in their life to get to where they are, and why they're such an Aristotle or Socrates, you know, in your series. I think that would be super cool. And, but you're right. It's something that might not play in my genre, but would definitely play in yours. And I think people would eat that up. And if you've heard about it, if they've come to you and told you about it, then that's really, I think that's a tip off that, you know, there are people out there thinking about it, and maybe that's where you go with that. So,
yeah.
Well, look, we're coming to the end of our time. We only have a few minutes left here, and I do this with every one of our guests. I always throw you through a lightning round. And, you know, so the object here is I'm going to ask you some fun questions. We're going to have a little bit of fun over the next few minutes before we have to close. So are you ready, Corey, for our world-famous lightning round?
I'm ready.
All right. First question out of the gate. It's going to be a little bit of a softball to get you warmed up. You yourself are invited to a lunch with one and only one other author, and they could be living or dead. Who would that author be and why?
I would pick Christina Lauren, which is actually two people who write the same book. It's because they're hilarious, and I've been reading a lot of their books, and I think they would just be fun to hang out with.
Cool. I don't know if you've heard that a few years ago, it might be not all that long ago, there was a group of guys that in, I think it was Spain, it might have been Portugal, that had written best-selling female point of view romance under a pen name. And they eventually basically came out and announced that, hey, we're not this woman you think we are. We're four guys that just wrote this story, and it made a big splash. So when you said there's two people that sexually two people win one, that's immediately what I thought of. And that's a pretty cool story. So if there was a movie made of the Corey Walmsley life, who would play you?
Oh, geez. Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah. Well, that's an easy pick. That's not a bad one. And I could see it fitting too, especially the not the Legally Blonde Reese Witherspoon, right?
No.
Okay, good, good. All right, we're on the same page then. Final question in the lightning round. There's a library burning and you rush in to help and you could only save one book. What book is it, and why would you choose to save it?
I don't think I'd rush into a burning library. Let's start with that.
I'll rephrase the question. There's a library that's going to be demolished, and you've got 10 minutes to go in before the wrecking ball hits, and you can save one book, and they're going to let you out, so you're safe.
Jeez. I'm not sure. It would probably be something that looks very old. I might just rush in and grab something that looks old because I know it's not being printed anymore and it's going to be valuable to someone.
All right. So, like a history buff, you're worried about an artifact or relic that might be lost forever and everything else will be reprinted, right? All right, well said. Well, look, we are coming to the end of our show. And so I want to thank you again, Corey Walmsley, for coming on and letting me conjure you into my realm, if it's only for a short time. But can you tell our followers, our listeners, our readers, one more time where they can find your stuff and where they can buy your books?
Sure. My books are available on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble online and basically anywhere that books are sold. You can find me listed as Corey Walmsley. I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram as Corey Walmsley. I'm also on Instagram as Corey Walmsley _author. I have a Pinterest page for those who are writing books. It's mostly for nonfiction, and I'm also Corey Walmsley on there. I'm on YouTube as Corey Walmsley, and I have my show on YouTube, Page Turner Studio with Corey. I think that's everywhere.
Yeah, that's good. That's a lot of reach, and that's good. And for my listeners out there and those in my readership, check her out. You'll like her stuff. I myself have not yet had a chance to read her stuff, but my wife is reading her stuff right now. So if that tells you anything, and she's not much of a reader, and this has interested her, so I'm telling you, if it gets my wife's good housekeeping seal of approval, it's worth a look. And Corey, thanks again for being on the show. And to our followers out there, thanks again for lending us your ear today. And until next time, I am JV Hilliard, and may your gods go with you.